Welcome to Season 2 of Create Pod. I'm Mike Moody.
And I'm Grant Davis.
This week, we have an interview with Miranda Wiley, host of the podcast Scene with Miranda, an Austin-based podcast. Miranda is also the co-founder of Bedpost Confessions, a live storytelling show here in Austin that's been going on for more than a decade.
But Mike, before we go ahead and get to that interview, I wanted to remind the listeners to please visit us at createpod.co. That's our website for all of our Season 1 and Season 2 episodes. Ton of great content there for podcasts, fledgling podcasters, and those people who are just interested in the art of podcasting. You can get it all at createpod.co. Follow us on Twitter at createpod, and please subscribe and rate and review the podcast. Give us those sweet 5-star reviews over on Apple Podcasts. We will love you for it.
Also, I want to announce we have a little format change this season. We're changing it up for Season 2. We'll still be releasing interviews with great podcasters who will tell you all about their journeys to success. Those will be coming out every 2 weeks for Season 2. And in the weeks in between, we'll sometimes have a looser podcaster roundtable discussion with Grant and me and maybe some of our collaborators like Mariah Gossett, podcast producer here in Austin. We'll be talking different topics about podcasting, giving tips, advice, and such. So look out for that on the feed.
Okay, Mike, so today's guest is Miranda Wiley. We actually caught Miranda at an interesting time in her podcasting career. She just wrapped up an incredible first season of her podcast, Scene, which focuses on in-depth personal interviews with creatives and other talented people. And she was considering how, when, and maybe even why to start another season of a show.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of us can relate to what she was going through because she was struggling to find the time to start the podcast again. Even though she has a lot of support for the show, and the first season was really well received. But it's understandable. She has a ton of other creative projects going on. She's a major programmer at South by Southwest, arguably the largest media festival in the nation.
It's huge.
She's, you know, family responsibilities. So she had a lot going on.
Right. So we go ahead and talk about all of that with Miranda, and of course, how she produces such a great podcast, which you guys can find over at scenepodcast.com.
Yeah, and Miranda begins every one of her podcasts by having her guests read what she calls a scene list, which is a list that the guest writes up before the podcast recording. And the scene list is very personal. It's meant to document the ways the guest is seen, acknowledged, judged, and represented, both by themselves and by others. So we start the interview by referencing the scene list and diving into her very personal interview style. Here's the interview. So people really come ready to open up on your show because they get the request to do this list before they show up to record. So obviously they're coming into the recording studio with an idea of, I really have to be vulnerable here. I really have to open up. Can you talk to me about how you create that safe space to have that extremely candid dialogue on your show?
It's a great question. I think that a lot of this comes from putting myself through it, right? So my email to the guest, I include my list, which has a smattering of the different ways that I've been seen or unseen. And so it's the same thing with doing the storytelling show Bedpost Confessions, and that, like, I've been on the stage and I've told stories. So I think you always have to, or in my experience, putting myself in a vulnerable spot has then allowed for people to feel more vulnerable. I also don't have a requirements of what the scene list is going to be about. So I might really want to engage with a guest about a certain topic, but if they don't put it on the list, then I'm not going to bring it up. So in that way, the guest is in control of the narrative of what we're going to talk about. They're really in control of the interview. I mean, for the most part, the guests that I had on, I have a relationship with. A lot of them were Bedpost performers. So we've worked together, me in the producer role and them in the creative role. So they know what it is to work with me as a producer, which I am always going to push people to go to places maybe they don't want to go and ask them to expose a little bit more than they feel comfortable. I mean, for me personally, like if I start to feel kind of nauseous about saying something or doing something, then I know that it's right. Then I know that I'm like making myself feel vulnerable. And I think that's what's kind of interesting about having done the show is that doing the show, I had to figure out where my place was and what I wanted to, how much I wanted to be seen in the show. And that's something I wasn't expecting. Because I do think with people that I did not know, which there were a couple guests that I had no relationship with, a way to make them feel safe is to a lot of times to share your own story or to use the same language that they're using. So you have to find a way to figure to loop that in. And so some of the episodes, you know, there was like 12 minutes of me telling a story. And when I was going into editing, I realized I didn't really want to include it. I was just that story was there to then get to the guest feeling like she could talk about this other thing. But it was a struggle to understand, like, well, do I want to include that? And then ultimately I felt like, well, no, that is something that I was sharing to make the guests feel safe, but the show ultimately wasn't about me. It was about my guest.
Right. That's an interesting way to do it because a lot of podcasters, especially some of the bigger personalities, make the show about them, even when they have a guest. Like I'm thinking particularly Marc Maron. He's a great interviewer, but you learn just as much about him on his show that you do about the guest. But I like that idea of a way to make the guest feel so comfortable on the mic is to share a bit of yourself on the mic as well, even if you're not going to use it, because it just becomes a safe, intimate place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really appreciate how you have taken this format of presenting this list and allowing the guest to dictate the terms of where the conversation is going to navigate, and kind of setting the boundaries that they feel comfortable addressing. And even in that space, you are still able to kind of weave through and target particular areas where they can also express that vulnerability. When you listen to other podcasts or shows or interviewers, are there certain areas where you think that, I guess where you appreciate where other interviewers kind of take a certain approach, and areas where you think that is a poor approach to interviewing?
That's a good question. I don't know if I'd say like a poor approach to interviewing as much as there's different show styles. And I'm definitely not into like the chat based shows that are like 45 minutes to an hour. Sorry, I'm maybe including y'all in this.
But, that's fine.
But not necessarily because you told me that you edit them. I guess what I really don't like are like unedited conversations that just kind of meander. Like I really liked Howard Stern growing up, but I liked the E version. Not the radio version, because I liked the visuals. I liked being able to see. But like listening to Howard Stern on the radio was just so, he just drooled on and all that chatter. But when you could actually see his interviewers and see how they react to him, I enjoyed that. So I think that that's just a different style. So like a show that really has inspired me is Death, Sex, and Money. And, you know, their tagline is things we think about often, but need to talk about more. I think I got that right. And, you know, her conversations, they are like an hour or longer, but then they really get boiled down to 20 minutes. And I've heard her talk, Anna Sale, the host, talk about her process. And it is in that way of like, sometimes like she does a lot of research and wanting to like approach because they're generally famous people, something new, something different. And so sometimes you do have to like ask the question several different ways to get the right answer. And so I'm interested in that, or not the right answer, but the honest, the different, the whatever it is, like something where you just feel like, ooh, that was good tape. And so I'm interested in the shows that really, you can tell that that craft has been worked on, you know, as opposed to when you just put up the whole.
Right. Yeah. There's a storytelling happening with the edit.
Right.
Yeah. I was listening to you on the Top Knot Squad podcast
Oh, yeah.
A few weeks ago. And they asked you about the origins of Scene, and you said something like, and sorry if I'm misquoting you, but you had an idea for Scene, but you didn't want to do a podcast. It was the last thing that you wanted to do, but you ended up doing it. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Why was it the last thing you wanted to do, and how did it end up as a podcast?
Right. It's funny because I'm still debating that right now, thinking about season two for Scene. Because I have done two podcasts. I did my first podcast in 2007. It ran from 2007 to 2011, I think it was. And then I did my second, which was based on Bedpost Confessions. That was basically a podcast based on the live show. And I guess I just wasn't that... It just didn't entirely interest me because I've done it. But then why I ended up doing it is because it's a format that I'm comfortable with and I think it really worked. And then also, honestly, this recording studio opening was like a big part of saying yes too. Because when I did my podcast in, 2007, I was in New York City and I just, pulled up a mic at my kitchen table and just mainly had to worry about when the heat was on and the pipes were banging. But, now I have kids. I can't record in my house. And I also just can't do it all. Like I used to do it, all of it, the writing, the editing, the post-production, all of that. And I just have to realize like my life is not, I don't have that creative flexibility in that way. So like hiring Mariah to come on as the producer, having like a recording studio to come to where I could just set up and do the thing and not have to worry about levels and all that sort of stuff. But I'm still thinking about what I want to do with season two. And, the irony is like it's a show about being seen, but you don't actually see the people.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, maybe I'll take it visual. Maybe I'll do interviews, live in some format. I don't know. Then that makes me think, okay, what does that mean? Would I still edit them? Because that is going to be a whole other quagmire of editing when you get into visuals.
Right.
And so would I then be okay letting it go? Letting it go meaning like letting it go, like just putting out all the 45 minutes or whatever it is unedited.
But there's still like a certain degree of intimacy that you'll lose with the camera there, mm-hmm. isn't there? Like do you fear that opening up to being video would make people a little bit more intimidated, I guess?
I do. We had someone filming at the Bedpost show for a while, and then when the filming stopped, someone said, like, oh, you just seemed like you were really having a good time. And I was like, oh, maybe it's because there wasn't a camera right in my face and just so conscious of what I was looking like and what I was saying. And there's something about doing a live show where it just is happening in that space and then it vanishes,
right.
I great questions. I'm asking them myself that, and I don't have the answer yet.
Well, on that same note, when you are talking to someone in a podcast setting, how aware are you of being present in the moment with the person talking to them versus that awareness of the audience? Because I know that at points, you do a great job of making a point of clarifying terminology and, making the audience more knowledgeable about certain topics that you might be delving into. But there's also got to be that point where it can be easy to get kind of lost in the conversation or just like listening to someone tell their story and fall into just being a listener in a way.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge that I think a lot of times because especially being in this recording studio, it's a beautiful space. And,
we are not paying you to say that, but we appreciate it.
Well, but it's also like you get to make eye contact with the person. And that's a huge way of connecting. But then I do have notes to then like reference something that I want to a question that I want to bring up. And sometimes I would feel like, fuck, I don't want to break this connection by like going through my papers, At the same time, I want it to be cohesive, and I want to make sure that I'm hitting the points that I wanted to hit. Like I generally, because the guest sends the scene list beforehand, I have a general sense of where the conversation is going to go, and my job, I feel, as the person who's receiving this list, is to just ask questions based on things that I see. And so that might be like, I can't remember one of them, but like they used a certain word several times. And so I circled it how many times, and I brought that up, and they were like, fuck, okay, yeah, wow, I didn't realize that. So, you know, I'm just reflecting back things that they've already said to me or put in the list. And so it does require an amount of memory or like feeling confident of just being like, you know, stay with me. I'm just going to look at my papers and get back to you. And, you know, the other thing that came up too is like potentially doing voiceovers when editing the show, because sometimes it felt like the conversation would zig or zag in a certain way where maybe then I would let the guest keep talking, but I knew that we were going to have to go back and define some things. And that's where I think the voiceover can be really handy, but I never did it, mostly because, again, just kind of on time. And I wanted to finish this project and put it out there, even though it was not the most perfect thing. Yeah, again, these are all good questions in terms of like trying to figure out what is the voice of the show and what you want it to look like.
It sounds like the best scenario for your show would be, like you said, getting somebody in a room, a comfortable space, having a face-to-face conversation. I know you've at least done one remote interview over the phone or over Skype, and that was an early one, I think.
It was, yeah.
Can you talk about the challenges of that, doing it remotely, and if you had to do that again, is there anything that you would do differently or try to prepare for in terms of not having that person right in front of you? It's kind of there's a distance issue, I guess.
Yeah. The thing, though, about that interview that was successful is that Justin Simeon, is do we call him a celebrity? I mean, he's a writer, director.
Yeah.
You know, he gets interviewed a lot.
Right.
So he knew how to answer the questions, like, on point, and he knew what sort of tape we were after. So it was pretty easy in that way. I mean, I was nervous as fuck. And he only had half an hour, and it was just gracious of him to be able to take time. He was filming in the middle of season two of Dear White People. They were filming. So, you know, he's in his trailer in LA. And so I think just that one, yeah, I did prepare a lot because he is somebody who is online and there is a lot of like footage of him and interviews of him. And so just knowing his backstory so that then when I could feel like I knew where something was going to go. So I think in that way it was easy. If it was somebody who was not as accessible, I'm not sure I would do it. I think it does have to be in person in some ways. I will say, though, on the flip side, I do feel like my interview with Shelby, who I did, like, and she had just performed at Bedpost. This is Shelby Haddon, who, you know, did a documentary on her pelvic floor condition, and she'd just performed at Bedpost the week before. And that was kind of, I'm not sure about that interview, and that I felt like I knew too much about her and had just performed with her. And so I felt like we got a little bit too, like, insidey in terms of our conversation. Like,
right.
our rapport was... So there's some balance, I feel like, between not knowing too much of a person and knowing them to a certain extent. The thing is that the format works either way. Mm-hmm. But I do think it is helpful to be in person.
You mentioned being scared about the interview with Justin Simeon, and you know that doesn't come across in the interview, but I am interested in this idea of getting over the intimidation factor, because I don't do a lot of interviews. This podcast is the first kind of foray into the interviewing realm, and I do find that to be already in itself a bit intimidating, but then to take that a step further and you are having a much more intimate conversation with people about some things that can be very private, like, how do you overcome that, and like, do you have any advice, I guess, in that regard?
Whatever works for you for calming, you know, do that. But then also, I talked about it in that episode, like my voice kind of cracked in this weird way. And I could tell like that I was really nervous. I'm glad that it doesn't really read, but I think that that interview was a little bit more stressful because of the time constraint, because it was only half an hour, because I was more early on in doing these interviews, and because I didn't have a personal relationship with him. And I think I just kind of take a deep breath and just remember we're all people trying to figure this stuff out. And I think that that's the thing about this show, is that everybody has a way that they feel that they are presenting, and it conflicts with maybe how they actually feel. I guess I mean to say that, like, I can be looking at Justin Simien as this established person, like he's taking time off, and I can get really kind of worked up in my head about like that. Who am I? Who am I to be interviewing him? Like why am I the person doing this? You know, why did he say yes to this? Like, he's this busy person. I can get all bent out of shape about it. But then I just think, well, who knows what's going on in his life, you know, where he's thinking, what he's thinking about. And I guess this is just the lens that I kind of view life in general, is like, just if you get spun out in your head about like the imposter experience, to just remember, I think we all have that playing out in our lives in different ways. So he might be feeling that same way based on something in his life. And I think when we can all just like see each other as human beings in that way, that we have a myriad of emotions and anxieties and things we're trying to work out and sort out, then it just makes it easier. So he could just have been nervous to talk to me. I don't know.
Right.
Looking at your first season, you had 7 episodes, and each one is a conversation with one person. You go very deep. What is the criteria for a guest on Scene? Is it someone who you already know intimately, or someone you want to get to know better, or what's the criteria for somebody to guest on your show?
Mostly it's been people whose work deals with identity in some shape. I don't know that I need to know them personally, no. But it is somebody whose work that I'm intrigued by and interested in. There are, since releasing season one, people are now asking me to be on season two. And it is interesting because I just reached out to people. Like, I created who I wanted to interview. So now people, like, approaching me and saying, oh, I'd love to be on your show. It's like, oh, yeah, what is my criteria? Like, do I want them on the show? I think so. But obviously, if they're interested in being in the show, then that means that they are thinking about their identity in some way or another. So I probably won't say no to anybody who wants to be on it. But I do think that, then there is the thing of like just wanting to have a range of voices on the show. So I probably won't necessarily say yes to everybody, because I want it, you know, to just be a variety of people.
In looking at the format structure that you have decided to release your podcast in seasons, has that kind of shifted the way that you want to approach a second season? Are you looking to explore a particular avenue that, like, maybe you didn't in the first one? Or what were other factors in going into choosing to release it as seasons?
We were talking about doing a season two based on immigration. And so people who have some sort of immigration story one way or another. But then in putting that out there, it then is like already having a hand in somebody's Scene list. And then that's not something that I necessarily want to do. But it is, when you're thinking about releasing a season, it's like, is there going to be an overarching story to this? So I'm not sure. I'm still playing around with that. And I think, I mean, really the reason to go into seasons is just because I just have too many things that I do. I started the podcast as a creative project, basically in between freelancing with South By, and then I got the full-time job with South By, and then I still have Bedfest Confessions, and then I have 2 kids, and, you know, just all these things. It made it easier and more digestible to think about doing it in seasons, so that I could have a period of time where I'm intensely on and a period of time where I'm off. And so getting the South By job, like, that is a seasonal type event. So you work 9 months on the event and then it happens. And so I released season one in tandem with South By, and it just was, it was stressful. Right. It was really, really stressful. And I don't think I was at my best self. And when you're talking about like, how do you create the space, or how do you make these decisions or feel confident asking people questions? I think number one is the setup. And I realized like I was not in a good setup to be doing all those things. I was stretched way too thin. So I wanted to now sync up with my, you know, job schedule, so that thinking about season two, I would do it when South By is not at its height. I mean, fuck, the thing is though, I was always like April. And now like, in fucking April, and I still don't have a plan.
We're helping you get back in the groove here.
I know. I appreciate it. It was the thing, like being on the Top Knot podcast. It's like, oh gosh, I love being in here. I do. That's the thing. I do really love talking on a mic and talking with people. So we'll see. Stay tuned.
Man, I do a few different podcasts, and a couple of them are so old that they were before the idea of seasons really integrated into podcasting.
Yes.
And I look over at like people who do the season ones, and I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous.
Right?
I should just try and transition my podcast to being seasonal. I need that break.
Yes.
Yeah, you might literally be on our season finale.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm tired.
Yeah. It also gives you time to reflect, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about a particularly challenging moment or interview that you had on scene in studio with somebody? Was there just a challenging question that you asked, or moment, or maybe something that you thought, well, I can't really use this. This would be great, but I can't use this.
I think that goes back to what we talked about earlier of how much of myself that I wanted to include. And I don't know that there's really a right or a wrong answer to that. And, you know, there's some people who have listened to the season and are wanting more of me in it. One person in particular who, you know, is really pushing me to insert more of myself because I've created Bedpost for people. I've, you know, essentially created the show for other people, and that there's still a lot of me to, I don't know, expose or, it's flattering, right? When someone is like, I want more of you, you know, you're multifaceted and interesting. But had I included more of myself in those interviews, I don't think it would have, I think it would, they would have been fine too. It's just a different creation. So specifically in the studio, yeah, I think as I'm recording, I'm always still have my editing hat on, and I'm thinking, is this going to make it to final cut? Is this something I want to include or not? There's this duality that's happening as you're trying to be present, but you're also wanting to make sure you hit these points, and it's kind of a crazy dance to do. You know, when I interviewed Jay, who was somebody that I knew, but never, we don't really go out together. Like she worked at Adult Megaplex, and now she opened up her own shop, Mary J. And I would come in because she would, Adult Megaplex and Mary J are both the sponsors of Bedpost. And so I would come in to pick up the raffle items and just talk with her sometimes for 2 hours. So they'd be these like impromptu, like really deep conversations. And I didn't know all of her stories. So getting her scene list, there was all this stuff that I had no idea. And still, when you get the list, you don't know how someone is going to say these things or what's going to happen. And she started crying immediately starting her scene list. And so figuring out what to do with that big emotion and where to go with it. The thing is that she really wanted to do the show and wanted to get through this. And so as much as, you know, I was just saying, you know, take time, we could stop. She's like, no, I got this, you know. That's one of those things that is just beautiful that I do love about doing these events like Bedpost or recording. It's like you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's very therapeutic for people to get the opportunity to express themselves and be seen, like you're allowing them this platform to do. But when you're structuring that, do you take into account that there is the possibility that you guys will veer into avenues? Like, have you had anyone request, like, hey, can you not include that in your final product? Like, some area that they might have felt comfortable one-on-one talking to you about, but then they go, oh, wait, there's a microphone in front of me. I'm not so sure I should have said that.
Actually, no, but really? I just did that on the Top Knot podcast.
Yeah. I've done that plenty in you know, podcasts that have much less consequence, I find. But I think that's interesting because you seem to have a pretty consistent time format. You're generally in that half hour to 45-minute range. And I was just wondering, like, do you ever have to, like, pad things out a little bit to fit it?
No, I think because people have come to the show with what they want to talk about, that doesn't really happen so much. And or it's the people that I have interviewed are all artists in one way or another. And so they are used to flexing that muscle. It's a, you know, it's a vulnerability hangover. Mm. I have it. You know, I like I probably will after doing this interview, any interview I do, any show, you know, the Bedpost show, like I just struggle to fall asleep because I'm just like replaying things in my head and
right. And
wishing, oh, that would have been a more concise way to say this, or I hope that came across the way that I meant it. But I think as you do these things more and more, you just get used to it. That's why the interview with Justin Simeon was so easy in a way, because he knew he just gave me such great sound bites because he is practiced in the art of interviewing and like exposing yourself in some way or another in terms of like, you know, history of yourself, really.
Yeah.
I admire you for creating platforms for people to be able to show up and tell their stories and be open and honest, even when some of those stories in certain venues might be difficult for some people to hear. I'm talking about Bedposts and even Scene. Can you talk about what inspired you to help create a platform for that type of open communication?
Really, it's just come from a desire of myself wanting to have that platform. You know, I moved to Austin from New York City, and when I moved here, I met Sadie because we were online in the sex positive community. And, you know, just asking her, like, what's happening here in the sex positive community? And she's like, you know, not so much. And then from there, we essentially started developing Bedpost Confessions. You know, I was asked once, like, why I did Bedpost Confessions. And I just said, you know, I do Bedpost Confessions because I can't not. And that's essentially kind of where we are still. We're 9 years in, and we have gone through a lot of changes. And we continue to think, okay, where are we going to go? What are we going to do with this? And the thing is that there's still interest. There's still demand for it. It is a sold-out show continuously. And so people are showing up. I got to show up for them, too. So essentially, we're not going to stop until there's no longer an interest for it. And I guess the only other thing that I can say about how I am this person is that my dad is a priest and my mom is an English teacher. And the power of story has just been in my family. My dad, you know, talked about his family in his sermons. So seeing him do that, you know, storytell and be on stage, essentially. And my mom was very into, like, I didn't take her class, but friends of mine did, the senior elective that was about writing your biography. And so, yeah, I think I've taken a lot of inspiration from them. And I've always been intrigued by people and the decisions that they make and where they are in their lives and what is challenging for them. And so I'm just a curious person in that way. So, you know, Scene came from wanting to have other conversations than just about sex and sexuality. So there's these people that I've worked with at Bedpost who have been on the stage many times, but I wanted to ask them other things. And so creating this other space allowed me to do that. It also allowed me a space to be seen. I was under a pseudonym for a long time. I did my first podcast under a pseudonym, and I still then was on stage under the pseudonym, and I've been wanting to shed that, and I have shed that. And so that was kind of one of the goals of the Scene podcast, or just that project. Before I was like, if I can't even get to the steps to make this podcast happen, I will have started this, which is the steps that it takes to then rebrand myself. So, you know, I essentially had no online presence as Miranda Wiley, and I had a big other online presence. And so rebuilding and, you know, literally being seen, like I don't have a LinkedIn. I don't have, like, I'm not that public. That's actually a summer project I'm going to work on is my LinkedIn. I'm saying that so you can hold me to it.
It's on tape.
It is on tape.
No backsies.
No backsies.
That must have been a really kind of difficult transition, and you're probably really brave for doing it, for dropping the pseudonym or the pen name and grafting that on to who you actually are and your real name publicly. Can you talk about that decision? Like, did you just wake up one day and realize, well, fuck it, I'm this person. I don't care who knows.
Yeah, it was actually not so much of a wake up one day, which some of things are like that, like the Scene List, like it just, I just started writing it. It was a slow process. You know, I still had the stage name, but she was really supposed to be an online persona. And then because I had built up some equity in that name, I used that for Bedpost and it carried over. But it always felt a little uncomfortable because she's just supposed to be an online person, so that when you internet search, like, you're not getting, because I was just really explicit about my sex life, which somehow I'm okay doing, but I wanted some safety so that, like, people weren't necessarily going to know all these dirty little secrets about me. So it was always uncomfortable. And there'd be this shift where I got closer to somebody, you know, off the stage, then I'd, you know, tell them my real name. And so it was like a marker of, like, friendship, and that we're transitioning into that. And then I did a piece about it, obviously, like I did a story, it was about coming out, because there's so many different ways that we come out. And so it, you know, started in terms of, like, this is my pen name, but y'all know this isn't really my name. And then, like, the last end of the last line is, you know, saying, like, hi, I'm Miranda Wiley. And so, of course, I performed about it. And then I still didn't know. And really, I didn't come out with using Miranda for Bedpost until last year, till the Scene podcast and project started, and still trying to decide what that meant, what I do. And I would talk about, like, in the show, and then people just kind of, it kind of doesn't matter anymore. So I just then started at the show just saying, you know, the when the like the MC announces us, it's like Sadie Smythe and Miranda Wiley, and, like, nobody, like, bats an eye or is just confused by it or like, what? You were not that person before. Like, I think we've kind of changed culturally in a way, and there's sometimes that people just know that you had an online persona and there's reasons why you did it, but it doesn't really matter anymore.
That fits perfectly with your seen and unseen kind of whole mantra there. And do you find that with shedding that identity, were you in a way pretending to be another character on mic that you notice, like, certain elements? Because I know a lot of this, there still has to be that underlying, like, real element of honesty going on. But were you, like, playing up certain elements or, like, hiding certain things in order to be that character?
It's a great question, because that was a transition in doing this podcast, because my first podcast was a very sex kitten. They were sex chronicles. It was personal narrative, and it was very supposed to be, like, me rolling out of bed, just been fucked. And, you know, so I was real, like, breathy on the mic. And and so when I first, you know, it took, that persona is real. It's me, but it's definitely more, I don't know. Yeah, it's a characterization. And so even when I took that persona on the stage, it took me a long time to kind of figure out my voice on the stage, because I still was kind of doing this breathy thing. And, like, that's not necessarily what you need. You need to be more, you know, amplify and like really hold space and be big and not be so much like, I'm just curled up here, you know, I'm just telling you some stories kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, getting back in front of the mic to do this interview thing, I noticed that I kind of went back to that voice, which is still authentic. It's still me, but there's just different ways that we talk. So it's been a process. There's many takes of me like being a little bit too sex kitten and not enough like interviewer.
It's hard to find that voice. Like as a podcaster myself, we do a Star Trek podcast and I know my role there.
Yeah.
My role is that I'm going to be the Star Trek nerd so I can be as dorky as possible, you know, but when I'm doing this show, I want to appear professional. You know, I want to appear like I'm in control and I'm really wanting to have a deep conversation with somebody. So it's a completely different lane. So yeah, I can totally relate to the strive to be authentic in what we do, but also realizing that harnessing the power of a persona can help with that as well.
And it's certainly an armor that you can put on for kind of protect. I play dumb on a lot of our podcasts, and it lends to allowing other people to play the expert a little bit more comfortably when correcting me on things that like I know, but I pretend I don't. Whatever. But at the same time, you know, if I don't know, that's my role. I'm the dumb one. So. I'm safe in that role. I'm very comfortable with it.
That's Grant, guys.
a few episodes back, we released our interview with Mariah Gossett, and she is the producer of your show, Scene. Yeah. And you collaborate with her on that, but you are also the producer on Bedpost Confessionals. How do you find that relationship working with her on this podcast in relation to how you've worked on your own show?
I think Mariah and I are both finding our way through the show. She was just coming out of school. She got a master's in podcasting. Is that a thing? She has a master's in radio or something like that's like fucking legit. And I had this content and I just wasn't sure what to do with it. And I knew I couldn't do it all by myself. So we really found ourselves in this very kismet way. And yeah, I think we both worked through. I think we would do a lot of things different based on like what we learned through working together. I mean, nothing bad. I mean, I feel like when you say sometimes different, people are like, ooh, what are you, scandal. But it's not, it's just in terms of what worked, what didn't. Am I really answering your question? Not really.
Well, you are, but I guess I'm also kind of curious about like being on both sides of the coin in a way. Like you've produced shows where you know, like to a certain extent, you have a degree of control in one aspect and then relinquishing a certain degree of control to a producer to kind of help guide aspects of the finished product.
Yeah,
is that?
Mm-hmm. I didn't really release much control.
Oh.
I think I had a very heavy hand.
It's your baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think Mariah and I didn't have a relationship beforehand. So, I mean, she performed at Bedpost 3-4 years ago or something. So I knew her from the stage and working with her in that way. But yeah, like it was something we were both finding our ways, like my end of like hosting and developing this new voice and her end in terms of producing. And I had a very heavy hand in it in terms of what the final outcome.
I love that you talk about the podcast as an experiment. It started as an experiment and you're still trying to figure out what works, what doesn't work, how am I going to change it, how is it evolving for the potential next season? Because when I listen to it, it just sounds very polished. And it sounds deep, but it sounds polished. And it sounds like there was so much work that went into it. And I just want to congratulate you on that because it's such a great listen.
Thank you.
But it's encouraging for you to talk about how it was an experiment and you're just trying things because I think that's what a lot of us are doing when we're producing an independent podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So before we let you go, is there anything else that you wanted to say? Or maybe I'll something just, we didn't ask you?
Yeah, well, I'll just piggyback on that to say, since, I mean, that's what a lot about this podcast is about, is creating a podcast. It's like, yeah, it's okay to put stuff out there that maybe isn't exactly perfect. I mean, that's, I love hearing that you think it's polished and it's good. And there are still some things that I would have done differently, but I let go of. And, you know, it's, I would say I established what I call an advisory board for the show. And it was people, it was a group of like five people that it, well, I should say it's not actual an advisory board because you can't, and that is the direction I thought about going, is having an official advisory board. But this was a de facto advisory board of people who I could call on to give a listen and, or read, you know, the copy of like how to describe the show. And that was really valuable, is to get that feedback. And my husband wasn't involved in this one, and he's been involved in all of my creative endeavors. And that was different to not be doing something with him. And there was this one thing I was really stuck on, and I didn't like how it sounded. It just was not good to me. And I just said to him, can you just listen to this like 1.5 minutes like here? And he immediately was like, yeah, that's not very good. And I was like, I knew it. But it felt so satisfying because it was driving me crazy and keeping me up at night, just playing this over of like trying to let this go. And he was like, yes, it's, you could have done that better. And I agree, like this, because I didn't let him know what I thought about it. I just said like, I need your take on this. But then he was like, fuck it. Like, and I'm like, yeah, fuck it. Like, it's still, there's still a lot of tape that was good in that episode, but it felt very validating to have somebody validate my worry and puzzling over this thing and like thinking, fuck, do I need to go back and like redo this interview or redo my outro or intro? Or, you know, there's so many different ways to structure it. And I think that that's the thing of, I could really spiral out on that season trying to figure out what was the right way, you know, what was the most professional way, what, like, how would, you know, Anna Sale have handled this, how would it, like, all that. And then I don't know, and I feel like a lot of times I'm still saying in this interview, I don't know what I'm gonna do. And I think that that's kind of the beauty of doing these projects, is that you can, and doing it seasonally, is like you can think about, okay, what did I really enjoy doing and what did I really not enjoy doing? And so I was taxed doing it in that time period. And so I figured, number one, I need to figure out when I'm my most fresh, and that is not during, you know, the winter season, and then take it from there of like, what else did I really enjoy?
Miranda Wiley, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Miranda for joining us on the show. You can find her podcast at scenepodcast.com. Also, listen to the Bedpost Confessions podcast, bedpostconfessions.com. That's a great one, one that I get to work on with Miranda every month that we produce here at Permanent Record. So who's next on the show, Grant?
Our next guest is Brian Salisbury from Junk Food Cinema, a long-running cult movie podcast that he does with C. Robert Cargill.
That's coming up in 2 weeks. Next week, tune in for a panel discussion. We might be talking about video podcasting. We might be talking about live streaming. That's something we've been doing here at the studio. If you want to check out our studio, permanentrcrd.com. That's permanentrecord.com. And don't forget to subscribe to CreatePod at createpod.co. And please give us those 5-star reviews on the Apple Podcasts.
Thanks, guys. We love you.
We love you.